important because it's not just that, it's also a hub. All of the different kinds of pro-democracy groups around Portland and Oregon, one way or another, across paths with KABU, rely on KABU for news, for information, and for a kind of sense of a community that is bigger than any one organization in any one neighborhood in any one county in the state.
Thank you so much for that, Scott. And with that, we will urge you to go to kboo.fm and click on donate, or text 4432, text KBOO to 44321. Send us a check, please, to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Scott Nakagawa, thank you so much. It's been a really interesting conversation today.
Well, thanks for having me, Paul.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, and KBOO.FM on the web. The time is 8:59 a.m. Next up is Fight the Empire.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fogring, and I'm bringing you another episode of Fight the Empire. And a very interesting discussion going on with Paul Rowland's show. People want to keep adding to that. Feel welcome. The number to call is 503-231-8187. One interesting item in the news that came the other day was that Senator Lindsey Graham, who's a Republican senator from South Carolina, he said Sunday, he said that the goal of the Ukraine war should be to, quote, take out Vladimir Putin, and contending there is no off-ramp with the Russian president remaining in power. And just on March 3rd, shortly after Putin launched a full-scale invasion of Ukraine, Graham first floated the idea of assassinating Putin during an interview with Fox News. The GOP senator put the idea forward on Twitter later as well. And he said, quote, is there a Brutus in Russia? Is there a more successful Colonel Stauffenberg in the Russian military? Colonel Stauffenberg was a German officer back in World War II who led a plot to assassinate Hitler. Plot obviously didn't succeed, and Colonel von Stauffenberg was, I believe, caught and executed. But anyway, this is Lindsey Graham talking. I think calling for the assassination of Russian President Vladimir Putin. This remark drew condemnation from the White House as well as some prominent conservatives. But later in March, Graham again doubled down on the comments, saying during a press conference, "I hope, quote, I hope he will be taken out. I just want him to go. I wish somebody had taken out Hitler in the 30s, Graham added, calling Putin a war criminal and not a legitimate leader. He said the Russian people need to rise up and end this reign of terror. Speaking on Fox News Sunday this weekend, Graham asserted his view that Putin's removal from power will be the best case scenario. Putin must go, he declared. If you don't understand this, that if Putin's still standing after all this, then the world's going to be a very dark place. China's going to get the wrong signal, and we'll have a mess on our hands in Europe for decades to come. So let's take out Putin by helping Ukraine. Okay, well, that is Senator Lindsey Graham speaking. It's just that, to me, I don't know of, you don't very often hear of a politician in any country calling for the assassination of politicians in another country. I think this is really kind of unheard of. You know, you can imagine what would happen if, say, somebody in Russia had called for the assassination of one of our leaders. I think there would be hell to pay. But this is a very bizarre thing that Lindsey Graham has said. And so, but I don't know. It's mind-boggling to me, and maybe it is to you. If you have any comments on that, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Lindsey Graham's comments have outraged the Russian ambassador to the U.S. Trying to find the comment that he quote that Anatoly Antonov, Russia's ambassador to the U.S., described his statement as unacceptable and outrageous. He said the degree of Russophobia and hatred in the U.S. towards Russia was off the charts. It's unbelievable that a country senator preaching his moral values as a guiding star to all mankind could afford a call on terrorism as a way to achieve Washington's goal on the international arena. So that is one of our senators from South Carolina calling on the assassination of a foreign leader.
We have John on the line.
We have somebody on the line. Good John. Morning.
Good morning. Thank you for your show and your topic. You know, if Russia had a well-informed public, Putin never would have gotten away with bombing Russian apartment buildings so he could attack Chechnya. And he never would have gotten away with all the assassinations that hits he made on his critics in Russia. And our country is heading for the same level of disinformation. So, you know, cutting to the big picture, we can't solve our human problem when we're heading towards increased disinformation. And, you know, it's like there's really no easy solution to this when we have nearly 7 billion people on the planet. We're like rats in a cage who are eating each other. It's just not a pretty picture.
Whoa,
anyway,
whoa,
I'll
whoa,
let
whoa,
you
whoa.
Comment on my comment, and you have a good day. Thank you for your show. Bye-bye.
I was going to ask our listener to talk some more about that apartment house destruction. I don't remember all the details, but supposedly an apartment house was bombed in Russia, and but somehow, according to one line, one story, that Putin used this as a kind of a springboard into power. But I don't really have all the details at that handy. So if anybody wants to call in with those, that would be might be helpful. Well, if Lindsey Graham had his call for his response. Nancy Pelosi also visited Ukraine, and she just said that Russia's war warrants, quote, the strongest possible military response, which, well, when you think about that, what would be the strongest possible military response? It could be very very dire. So this is maybe Pelosi didn't outline it in the stark terms that that Lindsey Graham did, but it's still kind of disturbing that you know, these calls for a military action, for war, actually, war and assassination, seems to come very easy to the lips of our political leaders from both parties. And you know, we might ask, how did we get here? How did we get to this this state of tension? It might help to take a look at the map. You know, the map of Ukraine looks, in a way, it looks a little bit like a double yolked egg. You know, you have in the north and the west of the country, you have ethnic Ukrainians who speak their language, and then in the south and the east, you have a kind of a Russian-speaking group, and they sort of they're about kind of like 50-50 as far as population goes, and so it's a very unstable situation unless they learn to get along and allow each other room to have their political projects going, but that does not seem to be the case. So you have all kinds of kind of basically a civil war going on, and it's where the latest, which we hear the most about right now, is that that Russia has invaded Ukraine, and they are there's a war going on in Ukraine right now, where Russians are fighting the Ukraine government, kind of in the south and the east of the country, where the Russian speaking people are the strongest. And so people, since this is what is the latest news, which is what our news media focus on, they don't really go into some of the previous how does this all get started. And you could say that it began. One big event was back in 2014 or 2015, where an elected president, Viktor Yanukovych, was overthrown by street protests, violent street protests in Kiev, and this. He actually fled the country. Now, you know, a lot of people, you know, can be criticized Yanukovych for a lot of reasons, but he was elected, and so he was overthrown in a kind of a violent coup, and kind of fled for his life. And so since then, the supporters of Yanukovych, going back to the Russian-speaking people in half the country, they sort of saw the handwriting on the wall, and that is when they, in effect, seceded from Ukraine. and began their holding their own seat of power in the southeast of the country. And so this is when our leaders criticize these Ukrainian secessionists. You know, you might inquire or learn about how what happened in that country that made them feel so so unsafe and out of power. So if people want to call in, the number to call is 503-231-8187. One of the latest things I heard from regarding Ukraine is that the Pope would actually like to meet with Pope Francis wants to meet with Putin, and he says I guess he thinks that, you know, somehow he can bridge this gap between the two sides, but he would like to meet Putin, and he accuses NATO of this is the Pope's words, quote, barking at Russia's door. So this is a situation that could get out of control very easily, if it hasn't already. And now NATO is apparently expanding. They are adding, I think they've already taken steps to add Sweden and Finland to NATO. Until now, Finland and Sweden have been considered neutral countries as far as this sort of renewed Cold War, and they have but they are lining up with the Western powers, which are, as Pope Francis said, barking at Russia's door. If you look at a map, the border, Finland has quite a long border with Russia, and that this actually puts NATO powers right very close to cheek by jowl with Russia. And so this is it seems to me this is a very dire situation that people are not fully cognizant about. But if people want to call in, the number to call is 503-231-8187. How do you think? Do you think NATO should be expanding, or if not, what should NATO be doing? This is if NATO does expand, I'm sure that Russia will respond in one way or another, and one way they could is by cutting off oil and gas shipments to Europe, which right now Europe gets a lot of its oil and gas from Russia, I think Germany in particular. And what would happen if the Russians cut that off, which I think they've already taken steps to do that. But Russia can always sell its oil and gas to China and countries in Asia, because as the oil and gas are getting in shorter supply as time goes on, and countries that have it have a lot of leverage over countries that do not have it. And Russia apparently has at least right now, they do have this surplus that they have been selling, and if they stop selling that surplus, a lot of countries would be in a very dire situation. Of course, the larger picture is that that oil and gas will run out worldwide sometime in this century. And we are, you know, we are already about almost a quarter of the way through this century, and the oil and gas they will not last forever. And whether there's any kind of you know, you hear a lot of talk about countries and economies taking steps to keep functioning without, you know, after the oil and gas have run out. So far, at least as far as I can tell, they have not come up with very much. That would allow us to keep the kind of economy going the way we do right now. What will we do for transportation? What will we do for, say, for just fertilizers, which use petroleum as their base? So how would that? What kind of economy would we have if we did? If we did have to cut back because of these looming shortages?
We have two callers.
We have a caller on the line. Good morning, sir. On the line. Well, that was one caller that dropped out. Is there another caller?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. Go on.
Well, it was sort of a broad, my take on this broadly with the U.S. and international, are sort of how we operate is this, I think this poison that is, so to speak, we don't, so to speak, negotiate with terrorists. I'm broadly speaking when I say that, though. So it's like this idea that, you know, we've never, you know, like make a sort of mutual agreed concession on both sides, or we barely ever, almost never do that. So what it leads to is these most extreme cases. These outcomes then are buildup of arms and threats. And I think it's so toxic. It's sort of throughout U.S. history, we don't sort of reach out olive branches, so to speak. It's always in the, so to speak, the language of either sanctions or we will harm you. We will be, there will be a reaction. I know this is broadly speaking, but I think maybe somebody hypothetical like Jill Stein might have, ushered in something actually different. As far as this, the way we interact with other countries,
remind people who Jill Stein was.
Yeah, I think this is the one of the main ills of U.S. policy internationally. Is it's always in this language of threat and violence, and it's never. Mm-hmm. And I think it's playing out this way in Ukraine and Russia right now. Later, you know, there have we weren't even calling for ceasefire, and early on the U.S. the UN and the US, they weren't talking about let's make a negotiation. It's always about buildup of arms. And look, I'm for the Ukrainians all the way, but wars end with agreements, and right away we should have been talking about agreements. Anyway, I'll take that's all I had, and I my heart goes, yeah, anyway, that's all I had.
Well, thank you for that call. I think you raised an interesting point. I think this is true, that the US has seems to make use of threats more than it should, say, put it that way. That in the past the U.S. is sort of the strongest nation in the world, has been able to kind of issue these commands to kind of tell the rest of the world what we think needs to be done. And I think that period is coming to an end, and certainly I think this is one of the sources of our friction with Russia and China, that here are two countries that they don't need us. They can get along without us. They can run their own affairs as badly as they can, in our estimation, but they do not need us to tell them what to do. And so when it comes to dealing with Russia and China, the U.S. is not in a position of strength the way it used to be. And so I think maybe a lot of people among our leaders, they don't seem to realize that. They seem to think that we are still able to give ultimatums. The problem is that the supreme ultimatum is if you don't do what we say, we will bomb you. But which we have done in the past, a war can easily expand very quickly if people are not careful. And so this looming threat is that the next world war could be our last one too. So this is probably one of the big dangers in affairs today. And if anybody wants to call in with a question or a comment, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And so now NATO is expanding right up to Russia's borders, which seems to be okay with our leaders. And I sort of wonder, it's almost like what happens when we're right up there with our armies facing their armies across a very thin border, and what happens if they don't do what we say? What do we do? Where do we go from there? And so it's a situation that really can get out of hand very quickly. And one thing that the state of affairs of the economies in the world right now, we are very worried about inflation, as we should be. The inflation, I believe, has hit something like 7 or 8%, which is really kind of unheard of. But there it is. And so there's no reason to believe that this inflation is going to go away, that just by kind of fixing the economy, we can kind of get back to, quote, normal. Maybe there is no longer is a normal. And so here we are with the inflation rising and people being kind of pushed out of their normal standard of living and feeling very angry and upset. And then you have nations who we accuse of blocking vital human interests, and it's a very dire situation. So this is get the last few minutes. If people want to make a phone call, the number 503-231-8187. But I guess time is running kind of, the show is kind of winding down. I hate to leave people with this feeling that there's nothing that can be done. Well, I don't know. Maybe there is. There are things that can be done. There are ways of stepping back from the brink and dealing with the real situations, the real problems that people have, and not trying to. The best thing that could happen that this country could do is realize that we are not. We are not the supreme power anymore, and that it might be a good idea to sit down and take other nations into account, which we have not done so well in the past. So we have, our history has been one of almost continual warfare against one enemy or another. And maybe people have gotten so used to this kind of history, they think it's sort of the normal thing to do, that it's normal to kind of threaten and bluster until you get your way. But considering the state of the world right now, it's not a very normal thing to do, and it's a very rash and very foolish thing to do. And so we see what's going on in Ukraine now, and this could very easily kind of seem like a very tenuous situation in Ukraine right now, but it could fall apart very quickly. And so I think with that in mind, I want to thank people for listening. I want to thank people for phoning in. And this is your radio station, KBOO. This is owned by the people who are by its listeners. It is your radio station, and your voice is always welcome on this show. And so I want to thank people for listening. I want to thank people for calling in. This has been Fight the Empire, and my name is Per Fogring, and we will be back, I guess, on the, I think, 3 weeks from now, which will be the first Wednesday in June. And so it's been a pleasure to communicate with everybody on this show, and I'd like to stay tuned for KBOO for what is coming for the next programs on your radio station. Thank you very much.